Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The University of South Dakota presents Human Cargo Trafficking in the 21st Century. It is a three-week exploration. It's sponsored by the Criminal Justice and International Studies programs, and it will feature speakers and events on April 12th, the 19th, and the 26th at 6 p.m. each night. Dr. Anna Koslowski is a professor at the University of Colorado, Colorado Springs, and an expert on human trafficking, and she is with me now in the SDPB studios in Vermilion. Welcome, Anna.
Thank you so much, Lori. I'm excited to be here.
We hear maybe not enough about human trafficking, but then it sometimes seems like we're always talking about it. So what's new in the research? What do we know now that maybe we didn't know 5, 10 years ago?
Well, that's a great question. First, the research has grown, right? It's increased, and that's really a wonderful starting point. But the research is starting to inform the practice and the policies. And so that's one of the benefits that we've seen change over time. So in terms of research, we know that victims or survivors of sex trafficking have a lot of needs. And those needs can differ from other types of violent crimes. So shelter services, for example, mental health treatment, physical health treatment. We also know that more research is needed on Johns, the consumers, and on the traffickers themselves. Mm. And that's where law enforcement is starting to focus some more efforts in these past couple years.
A difficult thing to research because you're not exactly going to have voluntary subjects who will come in and openly tell you what might be useful. How do you approach that with law enforcement then?
Absolutely. Well, one of the things that I've been really fortunate to do with a group, it's a team of researchers from the University of Colorado and also from Arizona State, is to post decoy ads. So we're getting information on Johns and on pimps that we can use with law enforcement informing their own operations and investigations from the responses that these two groups that have been relatively ignored in this triangle of trafficking can inform some of our research now.
What do you want to know about the consumers of sex trafficking? What sort of information would be useful to stopping it?
Well, I think the underlying question for everyone is why? How can you justify purchasing a human being, whether it's for sex or for labor? So trying to understand what's driving the sex trade is important, and also trying to understand the mechanisms of recruitment can help inform policies and practice to counter trafficking.
What do you know about what's driving it? What do you know right now about why?
Well, part of it is profit, sheer economic reasons. You are making money, and unlike selling drugs or selling weapons, you are selling an individual over and over and over again. So you're continuing to profit from, in this case, that commodity, which is a human being. In terms of the purchasing, there's a lot of different theories on why Johns will purchase sex, oftentimes sex from minors. So whether it's that they're seeking to fulfill a fantasy, explore some new behavior that they maybe aren't getting in a relationship or don't have access to. But part of it may be misogyny, patriarchy, how we can, objectify other individuals and treat them as others and therefore justify these crimes against them.
Do we have any sense of whether this is a trend that is, what is the trend? Is it increasing? Are the victims getting younger? Are they, what do we know as far as which direction this is going right now?
That's a great question. So the average age that someone gets recruited into the sex industry is about 13. I have seen reports from the FBI saying they may change that number to be closer to 9 because the minors that they're seeing involved in the sex industry, they're getting younger and younger. And they do have raids. Operation Cross Country is something that happens annually, and so they're able to help victims and also arrest pimps or recruiters and Johns. But we have seen a change in terms of the demographic.
So immediately I have a hard time getting past my anger or my outrage when we talk about 13-year-olds and then you up it and say a 9-year-old. So how do you do the research, from a personal standpoint and move past? Because you don't want your judgment to be clouded. You want to look at the facts and the statistics and what's effective and the science behind this. But yet this is incredibly emotional to have to be exposed to and to have to process yourself. How do you function?
Well, it's a good question. And it's one that I have to keep reassessing because it is such a difficult topic. But I believe that the work is needed and there's clear gaps in terms of what we know and what we have yet to know. The internet, for example, is a big player in sex trafficking. And so there's a lot of work to be done there. So I do have to, you know, have some time to decompress, to think about it. I started doing yoga now to help with that. But I also have a good support network of colleagues and people that I can talk to. And in doing this work, that's important to keep in mind because one person alone is not going to solve this problem. Right. It's going to take all of us thinking about it, talking about it, but it's also going to take interagency responses. And so that's, to go back to that original question, one of the changes that we've seen. So we have fusion centers, for example, which I know one of the speakers coming up is going to be talking about, that brings law enforcement, that brings the judicial system, even different agents within law enforcement. So the local, the state, and the federal level together. Nonprofits play a big role in this. But healthcare providers, we saw a case on an airplane, I can't remember which airline, but where a flight attendant recognized that something was wrong and was able to contact authorities, and they helped a young passenger who was traveling with a trafficker.
Hmm. So tell me, what are they looking for? What was that flight attendant seeing that was a red flag? What should the rest of us be looking for as signs that someone is being trafficked?
So signs, oftentimes you have a young individual with an older one who is unable to leave. They're monitored pretty regularly. They can't leave that individual. They're always with them. They may seem anxious or fearful, could have bruises, but a lot of times traffickers control through manipulation, so they may not have physical signs. Not having an ID, not being able to travel on their own, working really long hours. These are all some signs. If you ask someone a question and the story changes, right, it's inconsistent or there feels like there's holes, that's also an indicator. One thing I would want to say is that no one should necessarily intervene on their own. Right. Obviously, if we think that there's a case of trafficking, calling the authorities and reporting to the National Trafficking Hotline is the best step to take.
What are the smart questions to be asking someone that you have, you know, more repeated contact with, someone that you know at your child's school or whatnot? You know, you work at a library and this, you know, person comes in and you have ongoing interaction with them. What are those smart questions to ask about their lives that if you start feeling suspicious?
Well, the truth is you probably ask questions you would ask a normal conversation, right? Personal things. Where do you live? You know, what do you do? What do your parents do? If they seem to have a lot of flashy items, because with sex trafficking, oftentimes these victims are given new clothes, their nails are done, their hair might be done, they have jewelry, things that all of a sudden that they didn't have before. So asking where that stuff came from. Really just looking for holes in the story. So what is it like when you go home, for example? What is your favorite meal? What's your favorite thing to do in your free time? And if they can't answer these things, something's probably going on.
Are the flash and the sort of accoutrements of this, are these rewards, bribes, or is it marketing? This is how these people are being sold.
It's a combination. So usually all the flashiness, right, the gifts, they come with the recruitment. They come with the promise of a better life or, you know, this is the expectation of what you're going to be living like and living with. And here's all the nice things that I'm going to do for you. But then they also become part of the draw in terms of recruiting the Johns, right, recruiting the consumers. So they want to know that someone is, you know, well taken care of, that they're clean, they don't have STDs. So all of these things create the facade that it's a choice.
Right. When you mention STDs, and I don't suppose we want to get too graphic, but you talked about mental health and physical health. The survivors of this, what kind of physical problems do they have? Obviously, disease would be one of them. What else?
Mm-hmm. Well, they can experience a great deal of chronic pain associated with, you know, the conditions that they've been living in, with labor trafficking, especially malnourishment. But that can also happen for sex trafficking victims. Of course, STDs, unwanted pregnancies or unintended pregnancies early on for minors, but then mental health, right? There's a lot of oftentimes post-traumatic stress that comes with this, anxiety, depression. Many are addicted to substances by their recruiters as a way for them to maintain control. And of course, then that's a challenge that they can face moving beyond that exploitative situation.
What do we know about helping the victims of trafficking sort of reclaim their lives? First, let's start about getting out of the situation. What do we know that we maybe didn't know about helping them exit this cycle?
Well, we do know that many, and I'll say survivors at this point, they oftentimes don't see themselves as having been exploited because the manipulation is so strong, and oftentimes they're so young. They bond with that individual, and it can be hard for us to understand that, but we think about, you know, a 13-year-old who maybe hasn't had a lot of experience with relationships or maybe had problems at home. That person has preyed on those vulnerabilities and is able to bond and form this relationship with them. So it's hard to get them to see those signs. They do need a lot of usually counseling. They need to be able to process what they've been through. And they usually feel shame. And, you know, a lot of blaming towards what I could have done or blaming from others on how did you let that happen to you? You did this to yourself. And as a community, we have to understand that they need support. And if we blame them, we're probably driving them back to that life that they're trying so hard to leave.
What has law enforcement learned about dealing with the situation that is showing an impact in the right direction?
Well, I'm happy to say that South Dakota has passed Safe Harbor, which for law enforcement is great because they're not looking at the criminal activity that the minors had to engage in the process of this exploitation. So they're not blaming them for being coerced or being forced to engage in commercial sex. And so knowing that law enforcement can support them, can ask the right questions about whether or not they were a victim, will be very helpful in moving them through that process, because it's very hard to tell someone what happened to you over and over and over again. And as you move through the criminal justice system, that is what survivors have to do.
Do you have information on the problem in South Dakota and how it compares to the problem in other states? Does that exist somewhere?
So some of the best information that we have besides the attorney generals in each state is through Polaris Project. It's a nonprofit that monitors states' response, because state legislation to trafficking actually is different than federal legislation. Many states have come in line and mirrored federal legislation because it's easier for prosecutions and for law enforcement and interagency collaboration, but states can set their own laws. So Polaris monitors that. And South Dakota has been ranked towards the bottom of the tiers in terms of responding. But I would say that the most recent publication they had was from 2014. And now with the passage of Safe Harbor, with some of the victim services, with law enforcement, the statute's really starting to mirror what the federal statutes do in law enforcement receiving more training. Those rankings will change. Mm-hmm. And South Dakota's numbers, I don't know off the top of my head, but I do know that this year alone they've had a few hundred calls to the hotline. So people are aware and they're calling in when they see signs.
What's your presentation going to be at USD tonight? What's your focus? Is it tonight?
Yes.
Yes. Yep. At 6 o'clock.
Yes. Right. So this evening we're going to screen a documentary called Tricked, which is about human trafficking, really looking at trafficking and how the internet is connected to sex trafficking. And then I'm going to follow up with talking about some of the biggest misconceptions when it comes to human trafficking and specifically sex trafficking in the United States.
All right. Give me one major myth or misperception.
That it doesn't happen here.
That it doesn't happen here.
Probably the biggest one.
All right. So the documentary is titled Tricked. Is that pretty much the universal story that somebody is, I can't imagine anybody voluntarily chooses this life. So there's always an art of deception that is happening.
There is an art of deception or coercion. We do know that some individuals may think that they're going to engage in some form of commercial sex, but it's not what they expect. And oftentimes that's individuals who may think that they're going to, you know, be in modeling, and they may have to take some photographs, but they don't think that they're going to be you know, being pimped out mm-hmm. by recruiters. For the most part, though, deception, coercion, force, that is the element of human trafficking. And so that tricked component that you see right. in the title is very prevalent.
All right. That starts at 6 o'clock tonight. Dr. Anna Koslowski is a professor at the University of Colorado, Colorado Springs, expert in human trafficking. And all this is part of a 3-week offering at the University of South Dakota. It's called Human Cargo, Trafficking in the 21st Century, Smart and Informative, sponsored by the Criminal Justice and International Studies Programs. We're going to have more guests on next week and the week after that to sort of continue this conversation. Anna, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Lori. I appreciate it.